Thank you very much, Shane.
It's a Ray Garcia Show on RTE Radio 1.
And yes, a very good afternoon to you. Brenda Donoghue here in for Ray today. So how are we all doing? Please let me know. 51551 or Ray at RTE.ie. We have lots on the show today. Connor Pope will answer your consumer queries, so do get them into us. Pricewatch at RTE.ie. Really looking forward to chatting to this next guy. His name is Stephen Murphy and he's a spoken word poet. And he is going to be doing an upcoming performance on Shine RTE1 this Saturday night. Psychologist Stella O'Malley, do you remember her in Raised by a Village? She's going to be chatting about an article in yesterday's Sunday Indo where she wrote, "It's time to loosen the reins and let the children roam." So I'm sure she'll have a lot to say about that. And someone I want to say thank you to will be joining us after four, because in the middle of all this darkness and isolation, she has brought a sense of fun and mischief. And that is Alison Spittle. We're going to have a catch up with Alison just after 4 o'clock on the programme. Anyway, I just see the lovely Nigella Lawson has shared 4 tips for an easier life. And we all need that right now, an easier life. In our final column for the Sunday Times Style magazine, the TV chef 60, obviously she doesn't look 60, from London, revealed her guide to the art of getting through life and smoothing a path through every day. So what are they? I'm going to tell you now, so no need to wait anymore. Here are Nigella's tips. She said, don't delay replying to someone because you feel guilty about your response. Her second tip, and this is one that I am definitely going to be using, and it's a great tip, it's apply dry shampoo before you go to bed. Excellent. Third one, don't worry about serving piping hot food. And her fourth tip is do things immediately. Now, she says in relation to the first one about don't delay in replying to someone, if you delay replying because you feel guilty about not giving the response wanted and worried about disappointing people, stop it now, she advised. It helps no one, least of all the supplicant. I can see her saying that word, supplicant, as she's kind of stirring her chicken noodles, who lives in deluded hopes. So you must learn, in the words of the late great Ed Victor, to give the second best answer, a quick no. So yes, of course, I want to know, what are the things you do, the tips you have to make your day easier? It's the practical do's and don'ts, really, that I'm interested in. I'm not talking about the general philosophy as to how you get through the day, like don't sweat the small stuff, or it's nice to be nice. What I'm looking for are your daily tips. 51551ray@rte.ie. And here are mine. The first one is I have to put the clothes out the night before that I'm going to wear the next day. Now, I was thinking about this, and really at the moment it's just a tracksuit, because before lockdown you would have different types of clothes. You would have had your work clothes, your going out clothes, your going out clothes, and then obviously your tracksuit or your casual wear. But now really that's all it. But it really helps me if I have that gear out the night before. And the huge one that helps my house, if you have a dishwasher, is that the dishwasher has to always be in the correct stage of operation. I.e., if a cycle is finished, empty it straight away. If there are plates and cups there, don't let them build up. Make sure the dishwasher is empty to put them in. Otherwise, everything just backs up and it becomes quite chaotic and there's a lot of work and it's messy and you just come in, you feel stressed straight away. The other one is let them wear odd socks. I have wasted too much in my life trying to match up socks or get a system together that will match up the right ones. So there might be white and black socks, kids wearing them. It doesn't matter. They are my tips. But really, I want to know, what are yours? 51551. What gets you through the day easier and allows you function? Do tell us. We'd love to know. I want to give a big shout out to the 5 teenagers who have been hailed as heroes after a father and son were saved during a dramatic beach rescue in Cork yesterday. The pals that were fishing near Roach's Point, they rushed to the scene to save the father, who was left clinging to a marker buoy after his son 9 was swept out to sea on an inflatable device. Now, we're going to be chatting to some of the boys shortly, very shortly on the show. But it got me thinking, and I was thinking about teenagers, and we know they're getting a lot of bad flack. They're, you know, people are talking about them hanging around in groups, not operating social distancing, but they are having a hard time. And most of them are really trying to get their head around this. They have been amazing. They are missing Debs. They are missing their summer holidays. They're missing the excitement of maybe the first days in college and meeting up. That's all going to be changed. Even in my own house, I have an 18th coming up, a 21st coming up. They all have to be reconfigurated, and they'll all have a great time at that. But they get it and they understand that. And talking to a lot of parents and a lot of their friends, they really are trying, and they're anxious about school and they won't have lockers and carrying heavy bags and everything. But I just thought today, let's praise our teenagers. If you've a teenager, or you know of a teenager who's been doing some great work or has been really helping out getting through this, let's give them a shout out today. Why not? 51551. We'd love to hear about them. I was just on Twitter on Saturday night, and I think one of the things we're all missing, I personally, I'm missing gigs so much, but dancing. And it's not like I frequented nightclubs a lot, because I'm kind of nearly past that stage, even though if I do go to them, I go a bit mental. But I was thinking about, I miss dancing in a group so much, rather than on Zoom or one of these exercise classes. Just that community, that sweaty on the dance floor, Maniac 2000 at full volume. I miss all that. But a good friend of mine, Mo Catterson, our very own dancing queen in RTE, put up a tweet on Saturday that night that had a lot of us reminiscing about where we used to love to dance the night away. And she says, at Saturday night, we can't go dancing. Name your own haunt where you once danced the night away. I'll start, she said, Boho's in Nay, some spot. Yeah, I know it. I'll probably know a lot of them that come in, actually, Miss Ben Jude. But for me, many people might remember, and I think actually Ray Darcy was a DJ there, was Nijinsky's in the Curra in Kildare. Now, when I started going to discos, they were just finishing the whole chicken supper phase. You know that? You go upstairs, maybe somebody'd ask you to share the chicken supper with them, and you just thought it was fantastic. And they would also have, and I believe in this so strongly. I know there are other things I should care about, but I am a firm believer in the three substantial slow sets at a night out. I mean, how else are you meant to state your intention that I find you attractive? I would like to get to know you better. I would like to kind of physically get close to you. Obviously, all of this is pie in the sky because we can't do any of this now. But if we're reminiscing about what we liked, what nightclubs we liked to dance in, I'd love to hear yours. Also, the Warwick Hotel in Salt Hill was a favourite of mine. And lots of struggling and lots of, will we get in, will we won't get in. But Lily's Bordello, when it was open on Grafton Street, I once saw Brad Pitt there. That was very nice. Anyway, lots of people replied to Mo's tweet, and some said, in the 80s Cork, the Ark for bands. Also Swingers, Tramps, Zoes. The Apartment is amid teenagers. Sloppies and Jivagos from about 18 to 21. The Pink Elephant. The Pink Elephant. Do you remember if you got upstairs in the Pink Elephant? Anybody remember that? You might see Bono or somebody hanging around. The Hirschfield Centre. And somewhere I've been quite a bit, Susie Street on Leeson Street. Late drink, that was always great fun. Blinkards in Leopardstown. So we want to hear your dancing memories. Where did you spend a wasted youth? Do let us know. 51551. And some tips already in. It says, make your bed as soon as you get up. It simply sets you up for the day. That's a very good tip. Thank you. And Audrey said, Brenda, wake up, get up, make your bed. It's the only way. Well, the bed making seems to be a big thing. I make myself have a laugh every day, said Lorna. Do you make yourself laugh, or does somebody make you laugh anyway, Lorna? That's great. My granny told me never to run for a bus. I never have, said Mike McCarthy. Thank you. Pin your socks together with small pins before putting them in the washing machine. Thank you very much, but I don't care. That's what I'm saying. I'm kind of, life's too short. It is a good tip and I should do it, but then you'd have to get the pin and put them in together. I only buy black socks, so all my socks match, said Pat in Clifton. What a great place to be at the moment, Pat, if you're in Clifton. I'm sure you've more to say. Anyway, we've lots of texts. Do keep them coming in. I saw a lovely picture in the Irish Times today, and it was of a restaurant. And management and staff at Pacino's restaurant in Suffolk Street have taken a very novel approach to dealing with social distancing at the restaurant in the city centre. They have put really cute, large teddy bears. They're seated in rows to divide patrons at the venue, ensuring diners are kept at the appropriate distance. And I thought, what a fantastic idea. Now, obviously in Kildare at the moment, no restaurants are open, no coffee shops are open, so this doesn't include you in this, but the rest of the country, have you seen novel ways to make you smile as you try to socially distance? Have restaurants been creative like that? It's a lovely teddy bears picnic. Anyway, 51551. By the way, does anybody out there remember this team tune?
Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name, and they're always glad you came. You want to be where you can see, our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name.
Yes, that is the theme tune from Cheers. And I have some good news if you haven't seen Cheers. Channel 4 is repeating all of Cheers from this Wednesday. So if you haven't seen it, you have 275 glorious episodes ahead of you. It's a sitcom colossus, and it has kept the quality staggeringly high across all of its 11 seasons. If you feel like getting up, or you can record it, it's on at 7:15 every Wednesday, and it's starting this Wednesday morning. So that is a little treat for yourself. So tune in. And it got me thinking, what sitcom would you like to see repeated again? Now, I know nearly Friends and all that, they're on Netflix or whatever. For me, I think Sex and the City, because even though it might be a bit dated here and there, and in a way city living isn't as full in your face now with lockdown as it was before. But, you know, Carrie, Samantha, Christian, Miranda, I love their wittiness. I wouldn't mind seeing Sex and City again. So let me know yours. 51551. So Brenda, my dad died suddenly 6 weeks ago. There are a lot of administrative things to do regarding his passing. At times I've felt this overwhelming. I'm sure you have. My husband told me only to do one thing a day, and it's really helped me. I hope this helps somebody else who might be grieving. Thank you, Catherine. I 100% think it will. And I think on that note, we need to just sit back, relax. George Michael is always there for us in some shape or form. Mary J. Blige and Az. Yes, George Michael there, Mary J. Blige and Az. Lots of stories coming in. We'll try and get through a lot of them. Delighted to see you want to praise your teenagers for everything that they've been going through. We're here to do it. We're delighted to give them all a shout out. And a big shout out to Abby Kieran, who is 12-year-old teenager in Cherry Orchard in Dublin. She's so good out of school since lockdown and starting secondary school this week. She always gets her 5-year-old brother Rin up in the morning, and they've breakfast together before the rest of the house is up. Great girl, Abby, says Geraldine. Teenagers, delighted to hear you giving a bit of praise for teenagers. I'm a mother of a 17, 18, 20 and 21-year-old. Our teenagers get so much criticism, but I couldn't praise them enough, as they've made the biggest sacrifices. Thank you very much. Hi, Brenda. My 16-year-old son has been cooking since June while myself and my husband are working. He's become a great chef using the veg from our glass house that he tends to himself. I'll miss the dinners when he starts back at school. Well, well done. I have the most wonderful daughter, Aileen. She goes strictly by the COVID rules, particularly since I was diagnosed with breast cancer during COVID. She was even going to wear her mask in post-primary school, even if it wasn't compulsory. But the school sent a letter that masks were mandatory just to protect me. She's restricted seeing her friends, and she only saw two socially distancing. She's 16 and just can't understand why people won't take it seriously. I am so lucky to have such a grounded girl, and so you are. As I said, keep them coming in, because we're delighted to give them all a shout. God, there are lots of... here's another one. I want to give a shout out to my daughter, Rachel Devitt, who's been busy baking, dropping baked food to the local healthcare workers. She also has her own business, Ratchy Bakes, throughout lockdown. She recently launched a website, good for you, www.ratchy.com. Bakes. Congratulations there. And lots on the dancing and the discos and our own memories of where we used to give it all up. In the showband days, the best song for trying to get a shift was Anne-Marie, recorded by Jim Reeves, said John in Sligo. Hope you got lucky, John. We went to the Princess Nightclub in the Meadow Court, dancing to music by Meatloaf and having a few Stratton Brow. What's that? I wonder what that, what is that? Anybody know? Let us know. Great crack. Anyway, the Emerald Ballroom in Ballinasloe was the best in the West. If Brendan Boyer was playing, it was 7 shillings and 6 pence in old money. My mother would probably have loved that for a night out, I can tell you. And then, Brenda, just in terms of making your life easier, as you put cutlery in the dishwasher, put all of the same in together. It's much easier when emptying. Actually, what's interesting about that, I remember doing a story with a family who were decluttering, and the husband just got the cutlery tray out and just threw them all into the drawer. Didn't even separate the knives and forks. Had to be taken out and resuscitated. Unbelievable. Tamango, where the gang goes, says Siobhan. Itchy feet and Terenure, another great one. Club Apres in Kiltiernan, I loved it. Before that, O'Shea's Embrace, said Brenda Dorn. Good for you. Oh my God, Brenda was in Nijinsky's. That's the one I said one night. It's in the middle of nowhere in the Curra. After jumping on the man, after we bonded over the chicken curry, when we looked up from our shady corner to see his dad in his milking wellies and huge wax jacket standing there scanning the dance floor for Junior. The memories of that place, middle of nowhere, the plotting to get a lift from some of his older brothers and sister, classic. We'll keep all those wonderful memories coming in. 51551.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, it's Brenda here in today, and five teenagers have been hailed as heroes after they went to the aid of a father and son in difficulty in the sea yesterday afternoon. You may have read about it in the papers today. Jamie Venner, Richard McSweeney, Killian Foster, Kate Horgan and Harry Pritchard were fishing near Fort Carlisle when Valentia Coast Guard Marines Rescue Coordination Centre issued a pan-pan alert for any vessel in the locality to respond to an incident off Fountainstown Beach. And Jamie and Richard, two of those wonderful young people, are on the line now. Jamie, Richard, how are you guys?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Who's who? Which one's Jamie?
I'm Richard.
And I'm Jamie.
Jamie and Richard. Anyway, well done, first of all. Tell me a little bit about yourselves first. How are you friends, or how do you know each other?
Well, me and Jamie both sail in RCYC, and we've been sailing together for a good couple of years, starting in Offies and then moving into Lasers more recently, like a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh. And so there were five of you, so you're all into all this. And have you spent a lot of time during the summer out at sea, sailing, hanging out together like this?
Yeah, completely, yeah. Almost every day we'd be out in the water.
Amazing. And tell me, you and your friends were out fishing yesterday. What happened?
Well, we were waiting around for my friend to arrive, actually, and so he was coming down to the club, so we were just killing time, really, fishing away, and then we heard the call on the VHF, so we decided we might as well, you know, give a hand, see if anyone needs help, and then we ended up being the first people to arrive. So there was a localer, and he was in a kayak, and he picked up the father's, like, the man's son, and then he was struggling with the man, so then we, lucky enough, we came, and we took him into the boat and brought him into the beach then.
Well, first of all, can you tell me, what's a pan-pan alert?
Well, a mayday is like immediate danger, like someone, like lives are in risk, like get over there as soon as you can.
Yeah.
And then a pan-pan is like, it's still serious. It's like there's still like someone's like, not necessarily life's at risk, but they're like, they're in danger and they definitely need help. Like, so if you're in the, if you're around, just be, like, come over if you can.
And I can imagine, say you're all out there and you're fishing and you're probably, well, you're probably not chatting too loudly because you're quiet fishing.
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah.
So would you always have the radio on, the Marine Coast Guard's radio?
Yeah. Like whenever we're out in the boat, we always have the radio, like the VHF on Channel 16, just in case anyone needs help, and like more importantly, in case we need help.
Yeah. And who heard it first or what happened?
Well, Kate Horgan was sitting next to me and she heard it like first because we had like it was turned down low enough, and then she turned it up and then we all heard it in the end and we just went straight over.
And how far away were you again? Like, obviously I can't see it, but just give me an idea.
It was
5 minutes, I think.
Yeah, it was about 5 minutes. It was a couple of kilometres.
And were you nervous? Is this something that you would just instinctively do, guys?
It just came to us instinctively, I think, most of us, really.
And when you put the man who was being rescued, what did you see when you arrived there?
I managed to spot him because I could see the ambulance going down to the back beach. And then I could see the kayak waving to us. And I could just see the man floating at the back of his kayak holding on. And we just went down there and we picked him up. And he was in shock and he was pretty cold. We pulled him in and we got jackets on him and then we brought him ashore.
And was he speaking to you at that stage or was he just in too much shock?
Yeah.
What did he say?
He was speaking, but like half his words weren't really making sense.
Mm.
But like he was responsive anyway.
Did he know his son was all right or what was the situation there?
Yeah, we could, when we were coming over, we could just see the son being pulled ashore.
Mm.
So he knew his son was safe.
Yeah. So after that, it was just like, right, let's get you right in terms of him. I'd say that was a massive relief.
Yeah.
God. And were you expecting all the attention that's come from helping out? What's happened? What's it been like the last few hours?
It's been mad, really. Everyone texting us saying, like, oh, I heard you were doing this. And then we have, like, all the radio stations calling us, asking us to come on. It's mad, really.
Yeah. But, you know, you did a great thing, a really great thing. And the Crosshaven RNLI was tasked to this incident as well. And, Jamie, was your dad on the boat? Is that right?
Yeah, he was.
So tell me about your background then with the RNLI.
So my dad and both his brothers are in the RNLI in Crosshaven.
Mm.
And ever since I can remember, I've always been down in the station just with him, going down trips, just whenever there's a shout or if there's training on, I'll normally just go down and just watch and you just pick up on stuff, really.
And so that's always been kind of part of your life?
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing. And your dad must have been so proud of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did he say?
He was just surprised that we just knew what to do, really, and we're all just calm and collective.
And do you think that, particularly after experiencing it, and then you see it firsthand at home, that this is something that you would do, carry forward with you, maybe get involved in the RNLI, no matter what happens to you?
Yeah.
And where you go in the world?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And what age are you both?
We're both 16.
Okay. And when are you going back to school? What's going on there?
I'm going back next Wednesday anyway.
I'm going back on Monday.
Yeah. And are you into fifth year or sixth year?
Well, Jamie's going into fourth year and I'm going into fifth year.
Okay. Are you looking forward to going back to school?
Yeah.
Yes and no.
Yeah. What's the yes bit I get? What's the no bit?
When you're on the water every day, like, you're always seeing your friends, it's kind of hard to just go back to being in a classroom every day.
Oh, yeah, I know. I can imagine.
It's going to be difficult as well with the new, guidelines and stuff. It won't be the same like as last year, really.
No, it won't. And I'll tell you, not many of your I suppose, pupils and peers will be going back with such an amazing story to tell that had such a great outcome.
Yeah.
Definitely not. Well, Jamie and Richard, first of all, well done. Well done also to Killian, Kate and Harry. Your quick thinking, your experience and I suppose your ability to be there to help and do what you can deserve all the praise and you did a wonderful thing.
Thank you. Thanks.
And good luck going back to school.
Thanks.
Yous are great. Well done. So that's Jamie and Richard there, who really are heroes, along with the friends, as they went to the aid of father and son in difficulty in the sea yesterday. Take care, guys. Have a great time back
Thank
at
you,
school,
you
if you know what I mean.
We'll
take a break. Bye.
Yep.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
And it's Brenda Donoghue here, 51551. I was confused. I think the spelling was a bit off. But Sats and Brow was a bottled beer. I think it was sugar-free. Oh, we can all drink that then. Yes, they are great teenagers there who helped rescue the father and son. So everyone is giving a shout out to their wonderful teenagers. A huge shout out to my fantastic teenagers, Tallulah, Blanet, Cormac, 1916 and 13. They've been super during all this. We laugh every day. So grateful to them. We'll miss them when they go back to school. Love, Mam and Dad. And nightclubs. Hi, Brenda. I went to Lord John's in Sackville Place. When a slow set came on one night, a guy came up to me and said, "Well, are you getting up?" I was delighted. I got up and he took my seat. It was a quick exit to the ladies. Yes, I've heard that happening a few times. The Castle Ballroom in Enniscorthy, in the Summer Tara Ballroom in Corktown in Wexford in the 60s. Great memories, said Sheila. We'll keep those texts coming on in 51551. Now, I want you to take a couple of minutes and have a listen to this.
Sometimes, in that space between the waking world and dreaming, as I lay there on my back and I faced toward the ceiling, I would try to capture meaning by the feathers of its wings. As a thought became a bird, became the tune of which it sings. But no sooner had I heard it than its call had been and gone. And all it left behind it was the legacy of song that left me in the emptiness to stare at the abyss with the certainty of nothing but that momentary bliss.
Yeah, that was the words of Stephen Murphy and his poem, The Language of the Birds, which is set to feature in Shine on the 29th of August. It promised to be a very special evening of music and the spoken word. And Stephen is on the line now. Good afternoon, Stephen.
How are you, Brenda? How are you getting on?
I'm very good. I could listen to you doing your wonderful poems all day. It would just give me the greatest lift.
God bless you.
How did you get involved in Shine?
Well, Pauline, the producer, Shine, got on to me there a few months ago. To be honest, I wasn't actually long out of hospital. I was in hospital for a while, and I hadn't really been, I wasn't feeling myself. I was still fairly beaten up, but yeah, Pauline kind of rang me, and that at the start of that, the clip you just played of the poem, those are the only lines that I actually wrote when I was in hospital. And when Pauline rang me, I kind of thought, okay, this is an excuse to develop those lines. And it's funny because, like, normally I'm writing all the time, but in over 2 months in hospital, I didn't. That was the only thing that I wrote, so I kind of just saw it as a chance, I suppose, to develop those lines into the piece that's airing on Saturday night.
Give me the two lines again.
It's like, sometimes in that space between the waking world and dreaming, as I lay there on my back and I faced toward the ceiling, I would try to capture meaning by the feathers of its wings. As a thought became a bird, became the tune of which it sings. And that was it. Like, you know, I had plenty of notebooks, plenty of pens and all the rest, but hospitals are a very uninspiring place, you know.
And talk to me about why you were in hospital. You didn't have COVID.
No, apparently not. Although my outpatient nurse said it was possible that I had both, because I was doing a gig in the Olympia of all places, which is a very beautiful experience in January. And 2 days after that, I was just nailed to the bed with fevers. And 2 weeks after that, because when the fevers didn't go away, I was kind of admitted to hospital, and ended up spending over 2 months inside in Limerick Hospital, you know. And I got out at the end of March into a completely different world.
And what was wrong, Stephen? What were you diagnosed with?
They diagnosed it as miliary tuberculosis.
Right.
Which apparently, you know, if it's not treated, it'll kill you. So it wasn't much crack now, I'll be honest about it, you know.
Mm.
But I must say as well, though, that even when I was in, you know, my family were great to me. My wife, Chelsea, couldn't have been better to me. And I tell you something, Brenda, like, I know the frontline staff and all are getting a lot of high praise these days, and deservedly so, but the nurses in particular in the hospital inside in Limerick couldn't have been better to me, and they glued the points of place together. They really are, like.
And I'm wondering for you, because you've a young family, and you know,
one young fella.
When the gigs were there, the gigs were there, and it was busy, and you were writing, and you've a lot of projects ongoing, and that. And then suddenly you're in the hospital, and you're isolated. How difficult? Yeah. Well, can you just put into words for me that sense of isolation? What it was like for you coming from the other side of things, where you're kind of busy and working.
Well, you know, when Pauline rang me, she asked me that. She said, you know, could you write something about COVID? And I said, well, to be honest, I don't really know much about COVID, because I have been in isolation. I wasn't subjected to, like, I wasn't online at all. I don't do the smart tech thing. So I wasn't online to see the fallout that this had or anything. So it was completely in my own head. And I said, I don't know much about COVID. I don't know what's going on around me, but I do know a lot about sickness and isolation, because they kept me obviously in because it's infectious diseases and all that sort of crap. They kept me in solitary confinement basically for 2 months, as in the first month, you know, my like close family members could come in, etc. But the second month, after the lockdown kicked in, I didn't see Rowan, I didn't see my young fella for the first month, and then I met up with him downstairs in the hospital and for a few days, and then all of a sudden the lockdown happened. And so whatever about for me, you know, I was for a large part of it, I was too sick to know what was going on around me, especially for the first month. Like, I lost something like 20 kilos in the space of 4 weeks, you know, so I'm over 3 stone. But whatever about me, but the pressure that was on Chelsea, that was on my wife, and that was on the young fella, you know, and I got out and then the schools were shut down. So I heard you just when they put me through there. I heard you talking, reading out a text about the teenagers.
Yeah,
a mum was texting about her teenagers being so good. And do you know something, Brenda? Like, they get a lot of bad press when things go wrong. But around the area, like, I'm living in Limerick, and I tell you something, they couldn't have been better in all this. And it hasn't been easy for anybody. It really hasn't. And it's beautiful to see the way that people come together. Aside from the golfing society, but that's another story.
Well, I agree. And we are getting some, like, a lot of texts in from parents, you know, praising their children for what they've gone through, how they've held the fort up in a lot of families.
Yeah, they've been to themselves. They really have, like.
Come here, how are you feeling now? What state of recovery are you in, Stephen?
I'm not too bad now. As in, do you know something? I was just saying there to one of the producers, I'm sitting in the middle of an abandoned orchard and the sun is shining. Sure, how would you be, you know?
You know, it's interesting with COVID, right? I get a sense from you, and particularly there's a beautiful video that goes along with your poem that will be shown on Shine. And it's beautiful. And it was down in Glen Carr Lake.
That's the one, just on top of the mountain there. That's my home place is Leitrim, you know. I consider myself a Leitrim man in exile.
Of course you do. And you should be proud, and with the last person out of Leitrim turn off the lights and all that.
That's it.
What I was thinking about with COVID, and, you know, with people not having to rush to the cities to work and spending more time in the kind of towns and villages outside, do you feel that the lines are being blurred between city and countryside now? And that's a good thing in a way?
Jesus, I don't think so. I really don't think so.
End the question. Go on.
I'm a country boy. I'll always be a country boy, and I don't really do the city thing. But I think there's never been a bigger divide between, say, Dublin and the rest of the country. You know, as in, they're not going to lock Dublin down under any circumstances, whereas they lock the rest of us down.
We don't know yet.
I do think, but it's not even about that. It's not even about the kind of city-country divide or otherwise. Like, to be honest, it's a small island, you know. It's a tiny island, and you can't shake a stick but jade somebody who knows somebody, you know.
Yeah, that's true. And can I go back to this beautiful poem of yours? Like, really, I was thinking about that whole spoken word thing, right? And the way you deliver it. It's very much kind of the rhythm of rap and hip-hop. You can see that influence in the whole spoken word delivery.
Well, I've said before, I've been joking to a friend of mine about this. I think everyone who isn't a mute is a spoken word artist. Yeah. I'm not at all comfortable with the term spoken word. You know what? Yeah, it took me a long time to accept the term poet because I have such reverence for people who were poets over the years, you know. But poetry is an oral art form, so if anything, it's just come back to roots. And if you look at rap, if you look at hip hop and like the delivery, like some of the other pieces, particularly not just this one, but like Before You Push the Chair or whatever, it's delivered. Like, I write the beat. I'm not a musician. I wish I was. You know, I'd probably make a lot more money if I was a musician. But the reality is that I write the beat, and that's just always how I've done it. And I don't know. It's just like something in me that, and somebody's asked me before about that and said, you know, how do you write? And I said, well, it's easy. When you find the rhythm of the piece, it nearly writes itself.
I was looking you up on YouTube.
Oh, Jesus, you've little to be asked.
Well, you know what? I really enjoyed it because I thought your poetry was incredible. But you've written about mental health in the past with your poem Before You Push the Chair. And I saw it filmed in Billy Keane's pub in Listowel, and God, would you love to be down there now with Billy and chatting.
I'd absolutely love to. He's an absolute gentleman. He really,
wonderful,
really is.
Wonderful. Just goodness, everything. But after losing so many friends to suicide, you wrote this poem.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, do you think that we will be impacted by all of what has happened in the last few months once we've a chance to try and kind of untangle it all?
I think we already are. Mm. I think we need to, honestly, Brendan, like, and I've done talks in mental health and all this, and I'm far be it from me to be an expert. You know, you end up becoming a spokesman, and you're going, to be honest, part of writing that Before You Push the Chair was to get a handle on my own mindset. That if you tell people they're not good enough all the time, eventually they're going to start to believe it. But at the minute as well, you know, we need to be careful with fear. We need to be careful with how much we're exposing ourselves to fear. And I'm not saying that we shouldn't be cautious of all of this. Of course we should be cautious, you know, a little bit, as they say, common sense isn't common anymore. But by the same token, we need to not subject ourselves to fear, and we need to not alienate ourselves from each other as well, you know. And even if that just means picking up the phone and giving someone a call, we just need to be there for each other. Because long before the COVID thing, there was isolation. As in, especially in the kind of screen generation, we're not seeing each other as much as we were, and we need to kind of bring that back again. I really believe so. I think we need to allow ourselves to be human. And in terms of the psychological knock-on effect of it, like, there's loved ones of mine. I'm not gonna name check them at the minute, but they know who they are, who are living in fear at the minute, and it's not doing anybody good.
No, it's not. And your poem, The Language of the Birds, accompanied by a beautiful video shot in lovely Leitrim in Glencar Lake, is going to feature on Saturday, 29th of August, 8:15 on RT1.
That's the one, yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
It's fantastic, Stephen, and you are amazing. And I would urge people to just put your name into Google there and some of those wonderful kind of, I don't want to say spoken word, but you know what, recitations?
Well,
no?
You know, yeah, recitations is fine, and I'm okay with spoken word.
Are you okay with spoken?
Yeah, it's grand. People can call it whatever they want, but I just don't call it that, to be honest. I call it poetry because poetry is an oral art form. It's just going back to roots, and for me, like, you know, I said that there, Brenda, like, finding the rhythm of it. You know, even the other night, I was thinking, do you know this song, Kilkelly Ireland?
Yes.
I don't know if you know, but. It's like Kilkelly Ireland, 18 and 60, my dear, and loving son John, and it goes on like that. But when you find the rhythm of something, like, I ended up just writing this thing the other night as well called Dáil Éire in Ireland, from me to Martin to his son, you know, and just for the crack, but along the air of Kilkelly Ireland, you know, and that's up there on the Facebook page if anybody wants to just Stephen Murphy on Facebook, you'll see the bowled head in me.
And they'll also see you, as I said, RT1, Saturday the 29th, shine your beautiful poem, The Language of the Birds. Stephen, I could talk to you all day, and I can't.
Brenda, thanks a million.
But we will again. I'm absolutely sure of that. Go on.
It's been a pleasure, Brenda. Thanks for having me.
Enjoy your family. Thanks a million, Stephen. We'll take
a break. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, and just, we were talking to Stephen Murphy there, and The Shine is on Saturday, 29th of August, 8:15 p.m. But also the RT Player will have an exclusive Shine. And that goes on at 9:30 p.m. And John Creedon, who else, is going to present Shine on RT Radio 1 at 4 p.m. on Sunday, the 30th of August. That sounds really good. But on the line now, I have Conor Pope with your consumer conundrums. Good afternoon, Conor.
How are you, Brenda? How are you getting on?
I'm not too bad. How are you? Have you finished staycationing? Are you in one place now?
I am, yeah. I'm staying at home now. The staycations have been done for the summer.
Okay, look at you. I couldn't go anywhere. But anyway, tell me, you're writing in the Irish Times today. And it was about something, and I went, I don't know that much about them, but I want to know more about prize bonds. Tell me about that. What? Remind us what they are again and what the problem is.
I was prompted to write the piece because a reader of the Irish Times contacted me, and she was actually a winner of the prize bonds. Now, normally you'd expect that would be good news and the person would be delighted, but she was actually slightly miffed. Now, when I say she was a winner, she won €50. But what really annoyed her was she got a letter in the post from the prize bond people saying that they were going to reinvest her winnings into more prize bonds unless she went to her bank and unless she gave them her bank details, and then they would lodge the money automatically into her account. Now, the way it worked until February of this year was if you won the prize bonds, you'd get a check in the post. And I say this because I won the prize bonds once, Brenda. And I say once because...
And why are you on air talking to me?
Because I'll never forget, because my dad, when I was 18, he bought me £50 or £100 worth of prize bonds. I can't remember which it was. Yeah. And for 30 years, they just stayed dormant. I got nothing from them. But then suddenly I got this letter out of the blue from the prize bond people, and it said, like, you've won. And it was this really exciting moment. Like, have I won €1 million? Have I won €100,000? And I was like, no, I've won 50, which is better than a slap in the face.
Absolutely.
But they do write to you and give you the, they used to give you the check. But nowadays, they since February, they will reinvest the money into more prize bonds, or that you'll have to give them your bank details. Now, this reader was kind of annoyed, whereas the reality is it probably just reflects the world in which we live, and checks are just being completely faded out, and very few people use them anymore. But that prompted us to look to recap what prize bonds actually are, because they're a product that often goes under the radar, even though they're quite a good thing to invest in. They cost, a prize bond now costs €6.25. You need to buy at least four of them, which takes the total to €25. Around 5,000 prizes are issued every week. And then there's this €1 million prize draw, which takes place twice a year in June and December. Now, it's a state organisation, as you probably know, and it's run by the National Treasury Management Agency. And in an era when there's virtually zero interest rates, if you put your money in the bank account, you might be as well off if you had a few grand or a couple of hundred quid to put it into prize bonds, because unlike buying a lottery ticket or whatever it might be, when you buy the lottery ticket and you lose, which you're almost certainly going to do, the money's gone. Whereas with the prize bonds, the money is never gone and you don't get any interest from it, and it doesn't, like, it's not impacted by inflation. But at the same time, there's always a chance that you'll win the €1 million, and somebody wins it every year.
So say all of us. Can I give you another problem here? It says, I was wondering if you can give me a bit of advice. Due to COVID, we want to cancel our Ryanair flights to Spain, which are due to leave on September the 11th. The site does not allow cancellation. Our problem is that our current travel insurance expires on the 3rd, AIB travel insurance. We need to claim on the policy before September 3rd. What can we do? Any advice or help would be most welcome. The only option I can see is to reschedule the flights to 2021 in the hope that we'll be able to travel. And for this, we need to pay an additional €100. Many thanks in anticipation of a reply. I've been working hard as a nurse right through COVID, and you deserve a break. Can you do it in 2 minutes, Conor?
I can. Yeah, listen, this is a situation that's faced by an awful lot of people. The reality is that people are left playing chicken with the airlines. There's a very good chance that a flight to Spain at this stage will be cancelled, but the airlines won't cancel the flights until very close to the time they're due to take off. So if I was this person, I'd sit tight for now. There's not really a whole lot else they can do. If you do have the option to change closer to the date, so let's say it's around the 6th or 7th and the flight hasn't been cancelled, that might be a good option, because at least then you have got something. But the reality is that if a plane takes off for a country that you're not allowed to go to under the public health guidelines in this country, and you follow those public health guidelines and you don't get on the plane, you're treated as a no-show and you're not entitled to anything back.
Amazing.
So people are being really snookered by this scenario, because the airline if it sold all the seats, and this isn't exclusive to Ryanair by any means, it's any airline, if it sold lots of the seats and most of the people don't show up, it'll still make money if it flies an empty plane from here to Spain, because the seats have already been booked and already sold. So if I was to ask, if this woman was to ask me what she should do, is I'd wait for about 10 days. I'd wait till we got much closer to the flight off. If there's no sign of it being cancelled, at that point, I would seriously consider making the change and booking flights for sometime towards the middle of next year, because fingers crossed, Brenda, by that stage, we'll be through the worst of this particular crisis and people will be travelling overseas again.
I think initially, you know, maybe 3 or 4 months into this lockdown, when people were faced with this, will I reschedule? They said, sure, I'll definitely reschedule till, you know, February, March, April or whatever the following year.
Yeah.
But now people are much more, I suppose, they're not as willing to do that. They're much more nervous about whether it will actually 100%. Be a possibility.
I remember talking to travel agents in April and May, and they were all saying to me with 100% conviction that October would be the new July, and that October everything would be great and they'd see a real surge of bookings in October. But of course, as we now know, the virus is an awful lot more persistent and an awful lot more aggressive than we might have hoped back in the springtime. And there's literally no way the travel industry will be back to anything close to normality before the end of this year and probably well into 2021.
Well, you know what? I think this is an issue that's going to keep coming up on your pages in the Irish Times and with us here on the Ray Darcy
100%.
Show. Yeah, always a pleasure to talk to you, Conor Pope. Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. And any problems for Conor, Pricewatch at rte.ie. Well, coming up after the note, we'll have Stella O'Malley and Alison Spittle. But Anish Toshin and the Prescelton Nota, Lachirna Flaherty. Gormil Margot, Kieran, we've had lots of texts in about what sitcoms that you would like to see, because we were talking about the fact that Channel 4 is going to be repeating all of Cheers from this Wednesday, 7:15 in the morning, if you're up to it, if not, set it on record. 275 glorious episodes. And I said, well, what sitcom, if you could, would you like RTE, any of the stations, to play again, to show? Lots in. And do you know that Breeden Glass Nevin would like this one, Frasier?
Hey baby, I hear the blues are calling, toss salads and scrambled eggs. Oh my.
And maybe that's a great one. And I think that was born out of Cheers, actually, because Frasier made his first appearance as one of the most popular punters in the pub Cheers. By the way, I actually went for a job in Cheers. I was on a J1 in Boston and I was just on the corner, not too far from where I was staying. And I went down there with my CV. I actually thought I was going to be in the TV series. I wasn't in the TV series and I didn't get the job, but I thought I would have been really good at it. But I did try. Who else? Oh my God, Angeline Cork. She'd really like to see these again, these wonderful Golden Girls.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Well, Angela, it's funny. The Golden Girls is one of those ones that doesn't really date. And I know, I'm sure you can get it somewhere. So they're really witty. Two leading female, fabulous pro, I suppose, what would you call them? They were role models at the time. They were tough, they had their problems, but they solved crime as well. Cagney and Lacey. Do you see the jeans with the, they used to wear the jeans with the white lines down the side? And the tang tops. Anyway, Fiona said she wants Michael J. Fox repeated with Family Ties.
I bet we've been together for a million years.
And I bet we'll be together for a million more.
Now, actually, I never saw Family Ties, so that's new to me. That must be something I might get out and have a look at. But loads of you agree with me. Loads of you. And you all want the four wonderful ladies, Carrie, Miranda, Kristen and Samantha at Sex and City. So get your Manolas out. Have your cocktail ready. And for Sex and City. Anyway, thank you for all of them you sent in to us. 51551. What sitcom would you like back on the telly? Well, as we've been discussing how amazing teenagers are, we know that over 4,000 primary and secondary schools will be, hopefully, fingers crossed, reopening this week after a 5.5 month break due to COVID-19. And as part of the reopening plan, parents may have to stagger their drop-off time to school and won't be allowed to enter the school building. My next guest, psychotherapist Stella O'Malley, argues that we have been afforded a great opportunity to encourage children to walk or cycle to school independently, and we should grasp it. And she joins me on the line now. Good afternoon, Stella.
Hi there.
How are you getting on, first of all?
Well, I'm very much looking forward to the kids going back to school. I liked the first few months, but wow, I've never actually looked forward to school time coming back before. I know, much as I do today.
The importance of just having structure, I think, having something to get up for. You know,
I've got a renewed appreciation with school. Mm. I really do. What it gives the kids.
Now, what you're saying in your article, you're talking about the benefits of walking and cycling to school, but it's not just about the fitness, it's about resilience. And I find that really interesting. Can you explain a little bit more to us?
Yeah, walking to school, like, children have been doing it for generations, and, you know, it's been studied quite a lot, and it gives a lot more than fitness, although it does give fitness. Children need some time on their own, and that's kind of almost counterintuitive to these days. We think every second of the child's day should be supervised. And yet, if you look at the actual studies, they need a little bit of time where they're on their own so that they can learn in the shallow end how to be on their own. So that one day when they're a teenager and they eventually are on their own, maybe they'll be at a disco or wherever they go when they're 15 or 16, that this isn't the first time that they've ever been unsupervised, because that's too much of a baptism by fire. They need small and regular opportunities to be on their own. And going to school is a well-established, very good way to be on their own in quite a safe environment, in a very well-worn kind of path, in quite a good opportunity for children to learn to be on their own in the shallow end, so that they can be resilient, confident. It brings an awful lot of benefits.
It's funny because I have an 11-year-old and I see him now on the bike and I'm letting him go places I probably wouldn't have let him go had we not been in lockdown.
That's what inspired me to write the article, because I've never actually seen as many children on bikes. I've never seen as many kids just hanging around. I live in Burren, Offaly. I've never seen as many kids just out and about. And that's a direct result of that they didn't have camps, they didn't have holidays like we expected. And so the parents just let them off the rein a little bit. And that's good for them. I wrote Cotton Wool Kids in 2015, which is 5 years ago. And that was very detailed research about how it's good for kids to be on their own. It's good for kids to have, it's called the radius of activity, where basically the space around their home where they're allowed to play. And it's been reduced to an extraordinary degree in the last few generations. It shows in the last four generations, the average 8-year-old, now this is quite far, the average 8-year-old four generations ago was allowed to travel about 6 miles from their house. Now, I think that's very far. Mm. However, these days, the average 8-year-old is allowed to play around about 300 yards from their house, no further. And that's very short. And they're bored. And what do? They go into their screens.
Of course they do.
Because there isn't enough to do.
But then you see, as parents, we're worried about the dangers that are out there. We're worried about strangers. We're worried about their safety. We're worried they'll be taken advantage of. You know, there are all these things that will stop us from, we're just overprotective with them. So, I mean, you know, we have our reasons as well.
We have our reasons.
As parents,
I think it needs
us.
to Yeah, I know we have our reasons, but sometimes our reasons are a little bit inaccurate. We've never had more safer children, even in times of COVID. Our children have never been safer than any other generation before. So those kids 4 generations ago that were allowed off the leash 6 miles away from their home, they actually had a lot less safety. They had an awful lot more danger around them, and yet they were allowed to travel further. And people could say, well, that's why they're safe, because they're so close to their home. But yet it turns out that they've had more mental health issues these days than they would have had before, because they're less happy. They're a lot more anxious. They're a lot more inclined towards looking to their parents whether they like something, or looking to the parents whether they can do something. They've a lot less confidence in themselves as a direct result of they're never alone. They're not allowed to explore. They have very little sense of adventure. And when you have very little sense of adventure, it's very like animals in a zoo. They get bored and they start kind of, if you look at animals, they often kind of rub themselves up against the bars and stuff because they're in captivity and they're bored and they start kind of self-harming. It's kind of, children aren't exactly doing that, but they're doing something quite similar. They're bored and they tend towards their screens for want of anything to do. It becomes quite compulsive. And we really need to start bringing some joy and fun back into kids' lives, because it's dangerous to not. And just one thing you mentioned was the stranger danger. And I go into that in a huge amount of detail in my book, Little Kids. Mm. Insofar as we think that there's way more danger out there for kids. And yes, there isn't. It's just reported way much more. So there's way more analysis, way more reports, way more emphasis on danger. And yet there isn't. It's a static number. And it's 1 in 1.4 million. A child has in the risk of stranger danger. Well, they have a risk of, you know, 1 in 4 of developing a mental health issue. So you have to be very careful about what you're scared of and what you're not scared of, and make sure that you keep mental health front and center, because too many kids are really feeling it. Too many kids are fragile and feeling very anxious and very uncertain, and it's impacting them in the long term.
I'm thinking about the situation of, you get your kids to cycle or walk to school. And, you know, most schools are whatever, around 3 kilometres is the furthest probably that a child will have to travel. Some people live right beside the school. You know, it's just your location where you live. But you look out, it's heavy rain. They have a heavy bag. They've probably not had the proper sleep. They're a bit sleepy. And you just say, come on, I'll put you in the car and I'll bring you. Are you saying don't do that? Or what are you saying about, you know, these are probably excuses we make as parents to kind of, you know, mollycoddle them a bit.
Yeah, it's mollycoddling them. But in the long term, it's not great for them. It's easy to make that decision. It's kind of like, oh, I'm tired and there's McDonald's and just quicker, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And yeah, I can see why you can do it, but it's not good for them. It is better for them to go. And like, you know, we've always had this weather in Ireland, and children have been going to school in the weather for many, many years, and that hasn't been an issue, and suddenly it has become an issue. You can dress for the weather. So I wave that away as an excuse. The heavy school bags is an issue. And I do think that now that there's the COVID and there's all these restrictions in place, they are talking about using e-books a little bit more. And I know there's issues around e-books and we can't totally use them. But we do have to do something about these heavy school bags, because with the obesity and with the massive cognitive benefits, like increased concentration, increased cognitive ability if you walk to school and walk back or if you cycle, well, then we have to start bringing that in, as that is a healthy way to live.
So,
and going in the car is less healthy. 60% of school children in Ireland go by car.
I know. Listen, I'm putting my hand up here and say I know. You know what I'm saying? And tell me, what are you saying here to parents who are listening to the programme? You're saying this is a great opportunity, is what I'm gathering from this.
I'm saying that I've researched it within an inch of its life. I've really done a lot of work around this. It is very good for a whole array of reasons. It's very good for kids to walk to school or to cycle to school on their own. At a younger age with their parents, at an older age on their own, and quite early. You know, like 90% of 10-year-olds in Germany travel to school unaccompanied. Well, 10% or 11% of Irish children.
God, that's some
the same age.
Oh my God.
It is. And it's considered progressive in most countries. I'm amazed the Greens haven't taken up on this. And Roderick O'Gorman is the, you know, Minister for Children.
Yeah.
This is the Green way. It's the progressive way. It's very well established. It's very good for children. And I've noticed that, like, ever since I released that book all those years ago, well, 5 years ago, principals and teachers take up on it because they know the difference. They can see the difference. There's one, it's very good for children. That kind of tension of get in the car.
I know.
The fights in the car, the slapping in the car between siblings and things like that. That's not a good way to start school. It's much more zen, if you like, to walk or cycle to school. And the second is, it's a very good way of adjusting your mind. You know, if you go from, as we all know from the COVID, from your office in the sitting room and then out to the kitchen, it's kind of disorientating to move from one area straight to the other. While it's good to have a kind of a decompression zone, which is literally the child coming home from school, rather than going straight from the school into the car where they have a fight with their sibling and back home. It's kind of disorientating, and it makes them brittle and it makes them quite cranky. And that's why they get in the car and start fighting.
Okay,
so, and it would be better for them if they came home in the rain and they walked in and they had the lovely smell of stew being made. Mm-hmm. As in, it's more advantageous for children to go to school walking or cycling on their own, if at all possible.
Well, you're not alone in that, because Geraldine from Bray has just texted in. She said, when I was a child in the 50s and 60s, we walked from Stillorgan Village to school in Mount Merion, and we were also allowed walk to Black Rock Baths as long as we went with friends, all aged 8+. Lots of fun and adventures. Well, Stella O'Malley, that is really good advice there. Grab the opportunity while it's there. Get them walking and get them on their bikes. It's great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll chat again. And I hope you're going to practice what you preach now with your own children.
Oh, I do. I very much do. And they love it. In fairness, they love it. And they've always walked and cycled.
All right.
They love it.
Thanks very much, Stella. We'll take a break.
Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yes, and it's Brenda here until 4:30 with you. As I said, we're praising our teenagers today because some of them have been amazing, including Fionn Barron, whose grandmother has texted and said, I'd like to mention my grandson who kept my hair cut for me during the lockdown. He's 15 years old and one of the good teenagers, and his name is Finn Bowden. Boulabos Fionn, sorry. Well done. Now, somebody I said I wanted to say thank you to at the top of the show is now on the line. Alison Spittle joins us from self-isolation in Westmeath. Alison, are you okay?
Oh, I'm holding up grand. My mammy is making me lots of tea. I'm getting all the mammy dinners in me. It's actually, I'm pretending it's a retreat, so I am. Lovely.
What part of Westmeath are you in again?
Ballymore. So it's a village in between Mullingar and Athlone. They nicknamed it the village of two ends and no middle, and I live in the middle of it. I've given you quite a detailed description there. If anyone's listening and doesn't like me, forget what I said there.
Come here, tell me, first of all, you are self-isolating, as you said.
Yeah.
So
yes.
What kind of dinners have you been having? What's going on?
Oh, well, Mammy pulled out all the stuff yesterday. There's this restaurant actually that's closed down in Glaston called The Village, and they closed down due to COVID, and Mammy's trying to remake their duck and red cabbage meal, and I'm loving it. I had a great time. She's flying in the kitchen, doing a great job.
Isn't it funny that when we go home, we don't feel bad about kind of somebody else handing us, you know, giving us something, making it and going, because it's your mammy.
Yeah, and because like I think my mum wouldn't want it any other way. I think mammy is definitely a person who shows her love through cooking and stuff. And I'm a big control freak though. Normally I like cooking, but I'm giving a gift to my mum by letting her cook for me.
What's her favourite? If I came down, what would she have for me?
Oh, there's this thing, she got it in an Ainsley Harriet recipe book a few years ago called the Pasta Cream Bean Dream.
Stop
it. Which is, oh, it's lovely. So basically cut up bacon, cut up onion, fry it, right? And then you add creme fraiche and some vegetable stock and some long green beans, and you have it with pasta and cut up lettuce. Now, it sounds mad, but it's lovely. It's a real 90s weird dish. that has kept on forever.
And perfect for watching one of my sitcoms that we've been talking about on the show today. Listen,
absolutely.
I thought you were living in London, so I'm now confused. Are you home? What's going on?
So I am home to do some gigs, some socially distant gigs in September. Mm-hmm. And and also, like, to be honest with you, I was half afraid of when to come back. I wanted to visit my family. I haven't seen them in ages. You know, a lot of my friends that are from Ireland that lived in London kind of were quicker than me and went home for the whole of the self, you know, for the lockdown. And I spent lockdown in London, which wasn't great, to be honest with you, you know. And I would have rather probably have had it at home. So as soon as I felt it was like safe enough, I came back here. And it's been lovely.
And it has been. And I know I have a brother in London. And again, a lot of his friends come from different countries all around. And they all went back. And he said it's quite a lonely place now.
Oh, it was really lonely because I lived in Camden, and that place is full of pubs. And when it was during the full lockdown, it was lovely because I had to wear flip-flops and not worry about stepping an elephant, to be honest with you. When the pubs got open, that stopped. But it was all kind of closed down for a long time. It was very eerie. It felt like actually being in like 28 days later. You know, just the city was empty. And I had my balcony. Thank God I had my balcony. And I really got into gardening with the space that I had. And I have tomatoes. They're all ripening now, to be honest with you. I think the pigeons are going to eat them because I won't be able to reap the benefits of growing the tomatoes because they're all coming to ripen now. So it's fierce annoying.
That is annoying. Tell me, we were chatting earlier and we were talking about Nigella Lawson's 4 tips to have an easy day, to have an easy life.
Yes.
Have you got any of your tips?
Well, my tips mostly are for hangover days. Now, the only days I prepare for is the day after drinking. So recommendation number one, you need at least about 3 pints of water beside the bed.
Right.
One for just before you go to sleep, hydrate. Then 2 for the next day when you're feeling sorry for yourself. Can of Coke in the fridge and your headache pills and you are sorted. You'd be delighted with yourself. It's like going on holiday. You know when you clean up the house before you go on holiday and you're like, sick of this, I can't be, you know. But then you come back and you're delighted with yourself. Past you is an angel to future you. That's the way I feel.
Now tell me, you have been having these COVID parties
Twitter.
And that's why I wanted to say thank you. Because, you know, people have had, you know, such fun. They felt they were part of a community. There was messing, it was lighthearted. What have people said to you about them? Like, what have they brought to people's lives?
Well, it's been lovely. I did it because I was bored myself and all the gigs had gone. And, like, even now, to be honest with you, like, just to say, gigs are kind of coming back, but I feel like I feel like the COVID parties have been more of a help to me than other people. But it's been lovely to have like a community and something to kind of get up and you know, and get ready for and do. And the great thing was, like, I used to dress up like characters in the films.
Like?
So I was like Miss Trunchbull, which, tell you now, if you're a bigger lady, I recommend fully going as Mrs. Trunchbull for Halloween. Put the hair up in a bun. I swear, it's brilliant, do you know? So she's been serving looks, and then I dressed up as Shrek. I used a load of green eyeshadow for that now, for my face.
You had to make up, sorry, you had to do all the stuff from home. You weren't going out to costume shops or whatever.
No. Like, you know, when all the businesses, imagine now if the only businesses that were open were costume shops during COVID. So it was all homemade. It was all homemade outfits. And if lockdown happens again, I'll do it every day. But it's been kind of doing it every few weeks now when stuff is getting more and more open up.
That's great. And come here, you're working on lots of projects, though. Even though you are in isolation in Westmead, having beautiful meals given to you all the time.
I know.
You have a new podcast with the BBC.
Yes.
What are you like?
Gosh. I know, come here. I was getting depressed there for a second and then I remembered I have a podcast with the BBC. I'm delighted. It's me and my friend Fern Brady. She's a great comedian from Scotland and we both send each other voice notes all the time about what we're embarrassed about. And, you know, I've always loved radio. I was always interested in radio. I worked as a radio researcher for years. Used to have to answer the phone to people when they were ringing in to complain about stuff and I loved it. So I wanted to do like a show that kind of combines. Like imagine if Liveline happened but you rang up instead of like horrible stuff it'd be embarrassing stuff, you know. So I get audience members to send in voice notes about the most embarrassing breakups they've ever had or when they've got sacked or, you know, drinking stories or anything, and we all listen to it, me and Fern, and we play it out on the podcast. We tell each other our embarrassing stories and then we get a guest on each week to come on and talk about their embarrassing stories. So we got like Siobhan McSweeney who plays Sister Michael in Derry Girls. There's no funnier woman than her. She's amazing. She left, like me and Fern are both comedians and she left us crying laughing. Like she's just brilliant. So that's been, actually that's like co-video party, the podcast. I mean, you know, there's reasons to be cheerful for myself and I'm delighted. I like to work and I like to keep busy and it's been lovely. It's been absolutely lovely.
And just very quickly, tell me about the gigs you have. You're getting your head around having to do socially distant gigs.
Stop. I got a stress headache from it all. Do you know, I'm considering now just throwing out a bit of communion and doing a mass and pretending it's and doing a gig and then we'll be able to have gigs. But what's happening anyway is 3rd of September, one in Dolan's, then the 4th of September, we've one in the Whale Theatre in Wicklow. And I think that they're sold out, or definitely the Wicklow one is. And then we got Whelan's and the Barra's after. And it's stand-up comedy, all very safe, socially distanced, audiences are kept down. You know, the venues are trying their best to keep gigs going. And I just want to say a special thank you to, like, you know, venue owners and Aiken Promotions and all these different people, my agents. Everyone's just trying hard to get some sort of semblance of normality.
It is a pleasure talking to Alison. You're always great crack. Good luck with your COVID parties. Good luck with everything. And give your mother a big hug for me.
I will. Well, I'll give her an elbow. So
you can only give her an elbow. Anyway, great to talk to you, Alison Spittle there in self-isolation in Westmeath. Well, that's it for me. Ray is back tomorrow. Mary Wilson is on the way with Drive Time.